Welcome, everybody, to episode number 59 of the Average Jake Firefighter Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Owens. So it's been a few minutes, or a while, actually, since I've been able to sit down and actually record an Average Jake episode of the podcast. If you follow the podcast feed, if you know anything about what I'm involved in the fire service, then you know that a lot of my recent times and a lot of the latest episodes were filled with, and recording time was refilled with the Fireground Commander mini episode series, which is a series, if you're unfamiliar, that highlights the speakers that come to the Fireground Commander Conference every year. And this year was outstanding. We had some awesome speakers like Frank Viscuso, Jason Patton, Dina Ali, James Johnson, Jonathan Brumley, Jonah Smith, Bill Gustin, Basil Ibrahim. I mean, it just an awesome, awesome lineup of speakers that we had come to the conference. And so it is a huge task to come up with that list, and it's a huge task to put on the conference. It's a huge task to dedicate so much time to, even though the episodes are small, it takes a lot of time to dedicate to recording all of them and getting up with everyone and setting the schedules. I mean, I think we did four in one day, and that just took a tremendous amount of time, like on Ben and me and the speakers. So, you know, not a lot of time to put out an Average Jake episode. And the last one we did was Mission, Vision, Values, and I talked about wanting to, at the beginning of that one, I talked about how I was inspired in that one by National Fire Radio, where they were asking about riding assignments, and I wanted to expand on it about you know, with my mission, vision, values, and what that looked like for the, you know, for what it looked like for me, what it looked like at the fire station level, the company officer level, and why couldn't you have a mission, vision, value statement for your firehouse or for your shift, and shared with you what mine was, and then also got into some expectations that when I was a company officer, engine company lieutenant, and rescue company lieutenant, and then as a fire station captain. And I hope you guys really got something out of that. But the whole reason to do that podcast, or to start that podcast, was to go over riding assignments. And so what I'm going to focus on in this episode is the engine company riding assignments. I just haven't had a chance to get back to it, just because, again, like I said, just been so busy with the Fireground Commander Conference, and then, of course, you know, the daily stuff with life, but finally got a few hours to record today, so hopefully going to get into that here. But before we do, I just want a special shout out again to everybody involved with the Fireground Commander Conference, everybody that came and participated, all the speakers, and I would be remiss if I didn't share with every one of the listeners here the lineup for the 2023 Fireground Commander Conference. This will be our sixth conference in a row, and this one's going to be, I mean, I don't think we've had a bad lineup, okay? Like, so I always say, like, man, this lineup is awesome, or this one's going to kill it, but I can tell you that, like, we haven't had a bad lineup. We haven't had a group of people that have come and spoke at our conference that didn't do a very good job, or like that didn't inspire people, that someone didn't get something out of. I mean, we've had tons and tons of heavy hitters in the fire service. 30 presentations we have been able to bring to that Fireground Commander stage and to the Metro Richmond area. This year we had people from 12 states come to the conference. So it's probably the thing that I'm involved in the fire service that I love the most. It really is. It's a labor of love. It's frustrating. It's hard. I mean, there's always a lot going on. Especially when we get down to like weeks before, like probably about a month out, it gets ridiculously busy with trying to make sure people are on task with doing the things that we need them to do, making sure the speakers and everything are good to go. But, I really truly believe, and I've said this before, but I really truly believe that the big conferences are great, but these local fire conferences, I don't want to call them small because they're not small, but these local fire conferences where you're in a more intimate venue, you have socials where you go out. I mean, you know, like some of the videos that I posted to the Fireground Commander Facebook page and the Instagram and the Twitter account, I mean, you saw like the speakers that were speaking that morning were there talking to the students, and you just don't get that a lot at the bigger conferences. You just don't. At the more national conferences, you just don't get it. So But we're coming back for 2023, the Fire Ground Commander Conference, May 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Henrico Theater, again at the Henrico County, Virginia. And check this lineup out. Ray McCormick, Shannon Stone, DJ Stone, Lex Shady, Chris Tobin, Sean Duffy, Kyle Romagus, Kyle Smith, Wells Wilson, and Dan McMaster. That right there is going to, one, it's going to cover some topics from different perspectives, like building construction. We've hit building construction pretty hard these last couple conferences because it's important, but Lex and Chris are going to bring a whole new different dynamic to the building construction topic. Ray McCormick, we hit engine work every time because we're always going to hit engine work. I would say that between the three of us who do most of the planning on the conference, Taylor Goodman, Ben Martin, and myself, that at our heart, we are engine guys. Like, we are, we all cut our teeth on engines. We all just, we love the engine work. We love the engine work side of things. But we realize, too, that we might have been ignoring some things. So that's why we're bringing in Wells Wilson and Dan McMaster to talk about rescue company work and truck company work. And we're bringing in Sean Duffy to talk about search. And we're bringing in Kyle Smith to talk about fire protection systems. We're trying to hit some of these other topics with great speakers. Like this year, for example, with Jason Patton and Dina Ali, we wanted to talk about mental health for a long time, but it had to be the right people. It had to be the right timing, and it just turned out that this year was the year, and so we brought them in, and I couldn't have asked for anything better. But 3 days of lecture, May 8th, 9th, and 10th, Henrico County, Virginia, Henrico Theater. Right now, all the early birds are sold out. The $99 ones, they're gone. They're already sold out. They sold out in less than 30 hours after the conference, so they were done. Most people registered right there because that's a thing that we do. We give the people who support us, we try to support them. And if you're at the last session, if you leave early, you don't know. If you're at the last session of the conference, you get a head start. We don't open registration for anybody else except 24 hours later. So you get a 24-hour head start on the early birds at $99. However, $175 for 3 days of lecture, lunch provided. Social, we're probably going to do two socials this year, guaranteed to do one on Monday, probably going to do two. $175, 10 speakers, lunch provided, snacks provided. I mean, I don't think you can beat that anywhere in the country. I don't think you can beat that anywhere in the country. I dare you to find a better deal. Also, group discounts are available. If you email Ben Martin or message him on Facebook or anything like that, go to embracetheresistance.com and use the contact tab for him. Like, he can give you a group discount. So, you know, it's just going to be another great year. I'm super excited for this lineup. I almost wish we were doing it sooner so that we could get these guys in here, but it'll be May 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2023, Henrico Theater, Henrico, Virginia. Please come to us and have a great time. I don't think, you know, again, biased, but man, very few conferences put on the show that we do and the production value that we do, especially with the venue that we have. So, well, that's enough talk about that. Go to embracetheresistance.com to register. Click on the Fireground Commander tab and get registered today. But that's enough talk about that. Let's get into the real topic of the episode, and let's go over some engine company riding assignments to kind of round out this topic when we started with mission, vision, values, expectations, and now riding assignments. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Robbie here, Average Jake Firefighter Podcast. Continuing on with just some of the topics like I talked about in the intro, again, inspired by National Fire Radio when they talked about they're wanting people to share their riding assignments with them from everywhere in the country so they could kind of compile, I guess, a database, a list, and they were going to compare them and contrast them to what the fire service is doing out there. And I thought that was really neat, and I was like, man, I'm going to do an episode on what I think. And then it kind of morphed into, well, why don't I talk about, you know, the expectations that I have as a company officer? And why don't I talk about the mission and vision and values that I shared with everyone in the firehouse when I was a fire station captain and all of those things? And so then, so we did that episode, and it was a super long one, and then I kind of got sidetracked with the Fire Ground Commander. So this is kind of the that follow-up to episode number 58. where we're going to finish it off with the engine company riding and tool assignments. And again, I don't want to talk too much about ladder company stuff. I was assigned to a ladder company for a while. I was assigned to a rescue company for a little while. But where my heart is and where my actual expertise is, what I've been assigned to a majority of my career, is engine companies. not saying I don't have any knowledge, not saying I don't have an opinion on what I think ladder crews should and should be doing, what a rescue company should and should be doing. I totally do. But where I really, and to me what the backbone of the whole fire service is the engine company. If your engine company is not set, then all that other stuff doesn't matter, right? You can have the world's greatest truck company. You can have the world's greatest rescue company. You can have the world's greatest fire chief and all that kind of stuff. But if your engine company operations are piss poor, then you're not going to have a good fire department. And I kind of look at it as this. Someone said this to me years ago. I wish I could remember who it was. But they said to me, if you were going to start a fire department today and you had to buy one piece of apparatus, what would you buy? Well, the answer is an engine company, right? You wouldn't buy a truck company first because you couldn't put a fire out with it unless it's a Quint, which, you know, there's no really count, you know, no offense. That's a joke. But legit, you'd buy an engine company first. An engine company is the backbone of the fire service. The engine company is what drives everything. I mean, think about it. Especially in our fire department, there's more engines than there are trucks. There's more engines than there are rescues. We only have 6 ladder companies and 3 rescue companies. That's it. But every firehouse has an engine. Every firehouse has an engine. We're getting ready to add our 22nd engine company. And then we're going to add our 23rd engine company, right? So, and we're not adding any truck companies, you know, anytime soon. I think when we add engine 23, we are going to add our 7th ladder company. But man, like it's astounding, right? Like the difference in that, right? But you need an engine company. Every first dude's got to have an engine company. So if your engine work sucks, think about it on the fire ground. The engine dictates a lot of things. Unless the truck can beat them in, the engine's dictating where everybody positions. If the engine officer, if the engine driver lays the line crappy, if you do that, then man, if you're a lay-in engine, then man, like you screw up the truck company position. If the engine company decides to not pull past the house and park in front, you're screwing up the ladder company position. If you're doing like a booster backup, if both engines don't pull far enough past, then or stop it far enough short, you're screwing up the position of those other companies. You're making it a difficult lay for the third engine. It's just a ton of things that the engine company dictates. And so you got to have solid engine work. And that's why I really want to talk about engine company riding assignments and engine company tool assignments and what I used and what I handed to people when I became their engine officer. I even handed this, like, if we had a transfer guy in for the day. Like, you know, some people thought that this was egotistical. I don't know. To me, it was just like, hey, I can't expect a level of performance that I don't share. Right? So to me, this was important. So if we had someone transferred in for the day, I printed this document out and handed it to him. And I told him, like, hey, here at Engine X, this is how we do business. I don't expect you to memorize this, but read over it so that you have an idea of what I'm going to expect of you. And most of the time that person was writing, you know, and that's the thing too. Most of the time your transfer was writing, in my opinion, your most critical seat, your nozzle seat, the guy that's going to be going to the seat of the fire, stretching the line. So like, yeah, the driver's important. Obviously, they're all three important, especially in my case when you're riding with a 3-person engine. But the person that doesn't work with us every day is going to be filling the most, in my opinion, like going to be putting the fire out. So like, I thought it was ridiculous that people didn't share their riding assignments and their expectations with them. So, with that being said, let's get into it a little bit here. Engine company riding and tool assignments. And I know right off the bat, some of you are going to be like, what do you mean tool assignments? Well, you know, there's certain situations where I think that we need to bring certain things, right? There's certain minimum equipment that every engine firefighter should have. So, the purpose of these, to organize critical engine company functions on the fire ground and to maximize efficiency and effectiveness to accomplish the primary mission of the engine company. Mission. life safety, incident stabilization, and property conservation. The primary means to accomplish these incident priorities is rapid extinguishment of fire. In order to accomplish this, all members of the engine company must participate in completing critical tasks. This requires all members to have appropriate PPE donned and expert knowledge of engine company equipment and operations. Our other primary mission is emergency medical services. We must divide the workload and provide expert patient care to the citizens in which we serve. We primarily accomplish this by providing BLS or ALS care according to certification level, ODEMSA protocols, and DOF SOGs. That right there pretty much lays it out, right? Like, it says that everyone's got to be participating in this. Especially on a three-person engine company. One of my mentors always said it. Everybody's got to be a soldier on a three-person engine. Everyone has to be working because everyone's got a job. And I am a big believer, and again, some people are controversial. This is just how it works for us, right? And I'll explain a little bit. But I want my engine driver, to be getting dressed out, okay? Not necessarily before we get there, right? But I was a minimum driving bunker pants guy, so that way you can get there and throw your fire coat on. And a couple reasons why. A lot of our engine drivers, again, three-person engine, were running away from help, especially one of the stations where I was at, where we were a single engine house, not even an ambulance with us. So when we left the firehouse, we were waiting on other companies to come help us. Well, if I need someone to push hose at the door, if I need somebody to throw a ladder outside, if Meemaw pops out the window and we're already inside putting the fire out and she needs to be rescued, I need that driver to be able to go do that. We can't just wave at her and say, oh, hey, sorry, I'm the engine driver, right? Like, that's not okay. At least it's not okay in my book. So in order to do those things, you need to have your PPE on. You need to be able to have your coat on. Like, if you're going to run up the ladder and reach in the window and grab Meemaw, you need to have your freaking fire coat on and your bunker pants on. Like, that's just, to me, a minimum. Like, I don't know why people get wrapped around the axle about that. But that's how we do business, and a lot of the DOF, where I work in Henrico County, a lot of the drivers, that's the expectation, man. Like, you need to be in your gear because you are a soldier. You have to work. We expect you, once you get the line going and you get that water supply established, you're throwing ladders, or like, you've got your 5-inch disconnected and you're hooked into your intake and you're ready to receive water from that pumper down the street. Like, while you're waiting on them, you get that ladder off and you go throw it, right? You throw it to where we could need to be rescued, or where the high rescue potential is. Maybe we're getting bogged down and we need you to bump up to the front door. Well, the front door is an exhaust point if we've got it open. And if there's a hostile fire event, a flashover, you don't want to get caught in that in just a t-shirt, I can tell you. So you need your coat and you need your bunker pants on, right? At minimum, in my opinion. And so let's talk about three-man engine. The three-man engine, or the three-person engine. And let's talk about just some of their primary responsibilities and what we call them. First, your driver. Drive safely to the call. Positions apparatus appropriately. Operates the pump. Establishes water supply. Assists in placing firefighting hand lines in service. Stabilizes vehicles on a motor vehicle accident. Secures vehicles on a motor vehicle accident. Initial stabilization on a motor vehicle accident. Acts as a member of an RIT. Any additional duties is directed by the company officer. So let's break that down a little bit. In order to do a lot of those things, you need your gear on, like I just talked about. So that's why I was very big on driver, at least minimum, in bunker pants. On the way to the call, throw your coat on when you get there. The coat and helmet on when you get there. But operating the apparatus safely. Positioning the apparatus appropriately. Operating the pump. Establishing water supply. Assist in placing the hand line. And then on an MVA, like, you're stabilizing vehicles and securing the vehicles. And what I mean by securing the vehicle is making sure that the vehicle's off, it's in park, right? All those things. Keys are out, anything that's plugged in, the car chargers or anything, unplug those things, right? Because we know from documented cases that the batteries on cell phones and stuff can backfeed airbags, right? Taking care, securing the vehicle, disconnecting the battery if you need to, if it's a hybrid car, trying to locate that battery, turn it off, all that kind of stuff, right? That's what my driver's doing, okay, on an MVA. As a member of a RIT, if you're the fourth engine, Second engine does an initial writ with two people. That fourth engine comes up and backfills the writ with all four people, with all three people on their engine, unless that driver's needed. So you may have to act as a writ member. It's going to take an awful. We don't need to wait on you. So that's why I like for that driver to have his bunker pants on, gets out, throws his coat on, throws his air pack on. He beats feet up the street with the rest of us. We're not delayed in establishing that RIT or RIC. So let's move on to the officer. The officer navigates to the emergency, provides pre-arrival instructions to crew and other responding units, like water supply, things like that, performs scene size-up, establishes command when appropriate, performs 360 survey of the incident, formulates strategy for incident mitigation, carries out tactics for incident mitigation, acts as a division supervisor or group leader, backs up the nozzle firefighter on the initial attack line, acts as a member of the RIC or RIT, assists with EMS on MVA and medical responses, any additional duties ordered by command or superior officer. And again, I feel like that's pretty self-explanatory because we do more than just go to fires, right? So you've got to put that in there. Like what we usually would do on an EMS run, since we're kind of at that point, is the officer and the nozzle firefighter go in and make patient contact with the officer of the ambulance, the AIC of the ambulance, and then the two drivers link up and bring us anything else that we need. So that officer, if they're an ALS provider, they could be doing ALS. If not, they're normally like just assisting the ALS provider or just, you know, but they're getting in there and being hands-on with patient care. Again, three-person engine, got to be working. Can't have that well-dressed bystander. The nozzle AIC, is what we call the backwards person on the engine, the third person on the engine. They're also the attendant in charge of the engine. They do all the EMS reports. They do all the, you know, they initiate patient contact. Granted, like if it's an ALS patient and there's an ALS provider on the rig, we may swap that role, right? If the driver is a medic and we need them to get in there, we'll bring them in and we'll let them do their patient care, and they can kind of swap roles. But for the most part, that nozzle firefighter does that attendant in charge function on the engine company. So nozzle AIC deploys primary attack line for fire attack, occupancy type, smoke production, potential fire spread, visible fire, occupancy size, and distance from the apparatus determines this. Operates the nozzle, extinguishes fire, acts as a member of the RIT, RIC, patient triage on MVA, primary patient care on MVA, EMS response, any additional duties as determined by company officer. And that's a big one that a lot of people I don't see doing, even today, like even though we've been preaching it for years and years and years, that backwards firefighter gets out and he, as the officer's doing a 360, the firefighter is coming right behind him and going to each car and figuring out how many patients we got, how bad they are, and then he goes and starts treating the worst one. I think that's critically important. As a matter of fact, like it is a benchmark on an MVA for us that we complete triage and that we announce how many patients we have in the category, like 4 green, 2 yellow, 1 red, all that good stuff. So it's something that's critical that people don't assign that. They just assume the company officers do it. Well, the company officer is doing a whole lot of stuff. He's doing a scene survey for safety. He's trying to figure out entrapment. He's trying to figure out the best path to travel for the ambulances to come in or the other apparatus to come in. So like that nozzle firefighter takes a lot off that person's plate. And then I go into the rare fourth man, because I can tell you, in my fire department, it is rare to have four people on an engine company. It just is. It's rare. That doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's wrong. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of funny. Because it's so rare, we get so good doing things with three people that when we get a fourth person, it kind of screws us up. Like, we don't know what to do with that person. And I had that experience early on in my career. And so I was like, man, no, we need to have a plan for this fourth person, like what they're going to do in the rare case that it happens, because it does happen, but it is rare. And so I put in there the rare fourth man, and I call that position the doorman. In the event of a fourth engine company firefighter present, the following duties will be performed. Doorman ensures primary attack lines clear the hose bed. Ensures primary attack line is flaked out and proper charging. Acts as third firefighter on primary attack line and assists with advancing the hose around corners and bends. Acts as a member of the RIT, RIC. assists driver with vehicle stabilization and hazard mitigation on MVA, assists with EMS on MVA, medical responses, and any additional duties as directed by the company officer. In situations where we get that fourth firefighter, and I see that in my department, where they don't give them these detailed out expectations of what they're going to do, A lot of times I see that person freelancing, and even more oftentimes they're getting in the way because they don't know where they fit in, right? They don't know where they fit in, so therefore they're like, well, I guess I'll just go right here. And a lot of times they get in the way. And so you've got to give that person expectations, especially if you're so used to doing things with two, three, whatever. Right? Like, you've got to be able to give that person an expectation. You've got to be able to give that person a job. And because if not, they're just going to do what they want to do. So then after I go through those basics, right? Like, and we're still, I break it down even more into occupancy type. And so occupancy task, incident-based equipment assignments. The engine company typically operates in investigative, offensive, defensive, rescue, and transitional modes. The engine must also operate in a variety of occupancies, all with different features, which all require different skill and equipment sets for successful mitigation of the incident. For the basis of this document, the equipment list will be provided for all occupancies in an investigative fashion, as well as an offensive fire attack mode. The RIT and MVA equipment deployment will also be covered. It is the intention to provide a minimum equipment list for engine company firefighters while still remaining flexible due to the variety of occupancies we face and individual incident characteristics. So again, it's laying out the minimum equipment, but also saying, hey, we may have to change this up. We're going to talk about a single family dwelling. Well, if it's a standard single-family dwelling like a rancher or a tri-level or split-level that we're used to dealing with every day, then this is probably applies. But man, if you don't have any flexibility in there, right? If you don't have any flexibility in there, it's going to be really, 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 really tough for you to change up if you're dealing with like a McMansion or so, which is still a single family dwelling, but it's a different type of occupancy. It's different construction, different challenges. So you may need to omit something, right? You may need to omit something to add something, or you may, you know, or like I said, not omit to add. You may need to omit something or add something to your tool complement. Okay, so we get in all incidents, and this is in bold, italics, and underlined. All incidents require all engine company members to have the following. So this doesn't matter like what we're going on. We need our appropriate level of PPE. We need a portable radio. And we need a flashlight. Box light, survivor light, LED, Vulcan, some sort of light emitting device. I don't care. Like some people like have them like for EMS runs. Like some people leave them on, like leave a flashlight like on their radio strap. Our mics now have a little tiny flashlight. Some people like to use those little lights. Some people have just like a standard like mag light, mini mag light. I don't care, but I think you always need a flashlight, right? And you need to have your radio and you need to have the appropriate level of PPE, right? And I always tell people that if you don't know what the appropriate level of PPE is, look to the guy riding in that right front seat. Match what he's got on because he's the boss. So if he comes off the rig and he's got on a gown and some safety glasses, you should probably at least match that. So let's get into it. Single family dwelling for an investigation, right? Like we get there, there's nothing showing, yada, yada, yada. So the officer is going to do his initial on-scene report, and he's going to get out, do a 360 size up, and he's going to carry the tick, the thermal imaging camera, and the irons. Sometimes like I see people do the hook instead and they let the nozzle AIC firefighter carry the irons. I'm cool with that. In fact, I've kind of adjusted that a little bit, because the hook makes me a little more lighter. But at the time, plus it depends on what your engine has as well. Like at one time when I initially wrote these, we didn't have a good hook. Like on the engine I was on, I had to go buy one. And then, so we kind of adjusted them to a 6-foot roof hook with the officer. And then we let the nozzle guy carry the irons, right? But you don't want to bog that guy down too much, right? And so then the nozzle AIC is just going to carry the water can, right? They're going to carry the water can, maybe the irons, maybe a hook. And the driver is going to stand by the apparatus. And he's going to look, and he's going to be standing by, and he's going to be ready to deploy that attack line if we need to the door or to where we tell him to bring it. And he's going to establish water supply if necessary, right? Like, I'm going to put that on him. If we get there and we find a fire, then we're going to be in work mode, and I'm going to have him depend on, like, hey, to tell that next, if we upgrade the assignment, tell that next engine what hydrant to lay from, or to tell him just to come straight in so he can nurse off from whatever. I'm putting that on him. I'm also putting that the deployment of that hand line. We'll come out and get it. Yada yada, and we'll go in. So single family dwelling offensive fire attack, right? So this is what we're going to do with these three people in an offensive fire attack mode. The officer carrying the thermal imager again, doing all those same things that we did on the first one, right? Like thermal imaging camera, and they're the backup firefighter on the hose line. They're going to do that initial scene report. They're going to do your 360 size up. And this time we're going to take those irons and we're going to drop them at the front door. And the reason I do that is, one, that way the nozzle guy, and so I'll kind of explain that in a second, the nozzle firefighter is going to grab that hose line and he's going to stretch it to the front door. So by the time I come back around, like, I'm going to drop the irons at the front door, do my 360, come back around. And so if the door's locked, we now have two people there to force the doors. Don't have to run back and get the irons. We can force the door. Then once we get the door forced, I can leave them there because I'm going to be humping hose. If I find a forcible entry problem, once we're inside the house, follow the hose line back, grab the irons, go back up to the nozzle guy. We can force the door as a team of two, which is what they're designed to be utilized as. Now, I'm not saying you can't use the irons by yourself. Done it plenty of times. Done the baseball bat swing. Done the door open, blah, 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 blah. But at least if we need two people, we have them there and we have them with us. Again, that's why we split them a lot of times, because it's good to have someone to hold the Halligan and good to have somebody to strike it, right? It makes everything a lot easier. People don't get worn out. But you can do it by yourself if you have to. So that nozzle firefighter, he deploys the line. He's taking that line to the fire area. He's flowing and moving, and he's extinguishing all fire we come across. The driver, he's establishing water supply, charging the attack hand line, pulling additional attack lines. Like, if we need a backup line, like, what? Don't wait for that other engine to come there. Pull a backup line to the front door. Pull that RIT line. At a minimum on this fire in our department, we have three lines on the ground: attack line, backup line, and an RIC line. He'll perform additional duties such as advancing hose at the door, throwing ladders. If we need exterior vent before the truck gets there, he can do that. He can go force a back door. And if there's any victims that are brought out and there's no one there to treat them, he better start treating them or do the best he can. With trying to help them out. And that's a single family dwelling. And again, you don't have to agree with all of those, right? Like, you can do things based on where you work and what your occupancy types are, but I think it's important to realize that you do need to organize it, right? Because if you do this, and I was going to talk about this at the end, but if you do this, this not only assists in your organization, you can train like this, right? Like, this helps bullseye your training. It gives you a focus. Like, all right, when we do these evolutions at the drill school or wherever you do your training center, or if we're just faking it at the firehouse, we know how to deploy. So now let's move on to multifamily dwellings. And what we call a multifamily dwelling where I come from, and again, because, you know, I believe I've said this before, but you're only as smart as where you're standing, right? Like, and I have said this before, and I recently got into a little bit of a debate, I guess is the best word, on the Book of Faces, where, like, some person was talking about, like, this is why we need standard terminology and all this stuff, and I just don't agree with that, right? Like, and we can talk about that at a later episode if we want, but, like, to me, and I have talked about this a little bit on the podcast, where as long as everyone in your department understands what you're saying, it really doesn't matter what some dude in California thinks, right? Like, if you call something a split level or a tri-level or RIC versus RIT, or so on and so forth, or VES or VEIS or multifamily dwelling or whatever, as long as the however many people in your fire department understand what that means and understands what to do, rock and roll. It doesn't really matter what I think. It doesn't matter what someone that doesn't work for your place thinks. This pipe dream that everyone's going to call everything the same all over the country, one, I don't think is appropriate because if you've ever been anywhere in this country, you know that things aren't always the same. Fire trucks aren't built the spec the same. Tankers are called tankers are freaking airplanes in California. We still call them tankers here, okay? Like tankers as in like tenders, right? Like water tenders or whatever you call them out there. Like we still call them tankers here, right? Like we don't have planes that drop water, okay? So like so we call them tankers, okay? I think it's a pipe dream, man. Like things in the firefighting is very regional, and firefighting is and construction is different. Like the construction in Boston is different than it is here different than it is in the East End of Henrico, right? Like you're talking about colonial style construction. We have some of that, right? But a majority of it is new construction, right? Like we don't deal with that, right? And then the construction in California and in Arizona, where it's a million freaking degrees in Arizona, where they put air conditioners on the top of their roof. Like we don't do that. Also, Florida, they don't have basements, right? They don't have basements. They don't have cellars, right? Like, so it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to make them call something when they don't have it. To me, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Like, firefighting is very regional, and I think it should be because every part of our country is different. The people who are in those departments are different, right? And like you're never going to convince somebody who grew up in a rural area to change what they call something, right? They have their own language, right? Like, and so it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, neither here nor there. But a multifamily dwelling, what I'm talking about, is like an apartment building, right? It's an apartment building. Sometimes they have sprinklers, sometimes they don't. All those kind of things, right? Like we're talking about apartment buildings, all sorts of stuff like that, right? We're talking about apartment buildings. We're talking about like a townhome type complex, all that kind of stuff. Okay, like anything where there's multiple people living together. Right, especially if they're continually like if they have a shared occupancy space, like a townhome, right? Like they share walls, they have party walls, and all that kind of stuff. Or like in an apartment, a garden style apartment, where you have like four sets of apartments there, they share that one internal stairwell, all that kind of stuff. So multifamily dwelling, when we're investigating it, again, officer's going to carry the thermal imaging camera. So here's where I'm a little different. I'm a big believer in them when you're operating away from the rig. That we're carrying hose with us. Some people don't do that. It's fine. Some people don't do that. And there's something that I want to change too, right? Like, this is something that, I was talking about a couple weeks ago, and I was like, man, I'm going to change this when I ride an engine company. Actually, at this point, it would be kind of like riding across because with just what our current role is in the department. So I'm going to carry, the officer is going to carry the second section of our hose bundle. We carry 1¾-inch hose bundle. We have them in there. And so that officer is going to carry that second section of the hose bundle. The nozzle firefighter is going to carry the nozzle section of the hose bundle. And they're going to carry, the hook and irons and all of those type things, the thermal imaging camera. One thing I'm going to add to that, though, is that I'm going to want that nozzle firefighter to start carrying the water can. And here's why. Like, I'm a big believer in, like, so if we go investigate this multifamily dwelling, we're up on the third floor, and we find a fire, right? Well, we already have hose with us. Instead of having to run all the way back down, stretch a line up, or do something different, or the driver having to run a line up to us, we've already got the hose. We close the door. We isolate it. We open the straps, we open the bundle, we either stretch the line back to the pumper via the stairs, we can throw it over a railing to him, he can bring us a 3-inch leader line or whatever. He can bring us a more 1¾-inch line and we can piece in that way. We got a lot of options is what I'm saying is, but it's faster, right? Then he can charge it, boom, we're good to go. However, if it's a little small fire, man, we could probably, that we can put with the water can, but we don't have it, then we're going to be forced to like do something like use the kitchen sprayer or like try to pick it up, put it in a sink or a bathtub or something. Just not the greatest plan, right? So I'm going to want that nozzle firefighter carrying the high rise, the nozzle section of our hose bundle and the water can with them. That's going to be a whole lot better option than the alternative of like having to use the kitchen sprayer, having to use the kitchen sink or the bathtub or something like that. The driver on that is going to stand by the apparatus and, again, be prepared to deploy that leader line, get water supply, or maybe even supply the FDC, right? Like, you know, maybe that it's just that the sprinkler needs a little bit of beefed up, or maybe they can do both, right? Like, they can charge that sprinkler. You know, a lot of these things are like 13D or 13R, so they're really not that powerful. You know, maybe we don't want them to do that. Maybe we do. Maybe they're a real deal sprinkler that's like NFPA 13 sprinkler that's in the attic space and in the void spaces and all that stuff, and we really want to support that sprinkler system because that could get to some places that we can't get to rapidly, right? So it's just that occupancy dependent. You really need to get out and know your stuff and know your occupancy types. For that multifamily dwelling, for that offensive fire attack, that officer, again, all that same stuff, and then they're going to be like just like we normally would, right? Like, we're going to be the backup firefighter on the initial attack line. We'll stretch whatever line that is necessary, right? We'll stretch whatever line is needed. We'll stretch whatever line is necessary. A lot of our multifamily dwellings, we're probably going with a 300 or 400 foot line or a leader line. You know, and those are all things that, you know, have different intricacies, right? Like, if we're going with a leader line, then that officer is going to have a section of the hose bundle. If they're going with a 400-foot pre-connect or a 300-foot pre-connect, that officer has a role in stretching that line. If it's just a 200-foot pre-connect that we can hit it with, then that officer is going to be has a different role, right? So it's all those things dependent, but at least they know those roles going in. And again, that nozzle firefighter, you're going to deploy the line, again, depending on what it is, be the nozzle firefighter. Driver's going to establish that water supply. He's going to look to supply the FDC or hook up to the hydrant, whatever, you know, whatever that occupancy type requires. And then deploy a leader line if needed, get those additional attack lines, charge the additional attack lines, place other lines in service, throw a ladder if need to be. And then, you know, like I said, like be that third firefighter outside doing all those other things, that basically being the hardest 10 worker in the first 10 minutes. So let's move on to commercial occupancies. And I can tell you, anytime with a commercial occupancy, you should be thinking walk, don't run. You don't want to charge head first into any commercial occupancy. I don't care how small it is, how much you think's not showing, like, you don't want to. And I can tell a quick story. When I was an engine company firefighter at Engine Company 6, we started going to all these commercial occupancy types, man. Like, it was just constant. And we got caught with our pants down, whereas we just, like, so many times. And this commercial occupancy had a pre-action system specifically, it was Halon. And it had deployed. And we went in there, and just something didn't seem right, right? Like, something didn't seem right. Like, people, like one guy even got a little dizzy and lightheaded, so we backed out smartly. And we went out and got the, we masked up, and we went out and got the foregas monitor, and sure enough, it had oxygen displacement, right? Like, all this guy. So we started learning our lesson, like, don't run head on in these things. And so from that point on, we carried the truck company or the engine officer, whoever, and sometimes both, carried that foregas monitor every time we went into a commercial occupancy. So don't rush into these things. Don't rush into these things. Do a good size up. I'm a big proponent of doing what I call, especially on these big box ones, like your Walmart, your Targets, your BJ's, your Sam's Clubs, any big building, anything like that, do a motorized 360, especially if you get there and there's nothing showing, right? Or like you can't see anything from the front, like right around the backside of the building. That can do a couple different things for you. One, there's three people on the engine, right? That gives you three sets of eyes. Maybe you missed something. So three sets of eyes are way better than just one set of eyes. Two, it's faster. You can get that 360 done a whole lot faster. Three, it's going to allow you to figure out, like, maybe the front door ain't the best, and 90% of the time the front door ain't the best in these, right? So you can ride around, you can find your additional water supply, like, because, you know, sometimes the maps aren't accurate, right? You can find out, you can see the sprinkler systems, right? Like, you can see if there's any water coming out of the 2-inch drain. You can see, you know, all those type things. To see, you can hear the water gong, like all this type of stuff, and you may find a better deployment point. You may be able to find that the fire's in the back and that there's a man door right next to the roll-up door, and you can force that door, make your initial attack from there, right? Which is a whole lot safer, a whole lot more direct route to the fire, all those things, right? So commercial occupancies, walk, don't run. For an investigation, officers are going to have that thermal imaging camera. Again, we're taking the hose bundle. Some people call it a high-rise pack. We're taking that hose bundle, and, man, we're going to, especially if we're operating away from the rig, we go into the front door, and we find a fire in the back. We can find the nearest, we can isolate it. We can find the nearest exit point. And then we can open that door. I can radio the driver. They can just drive. They can drive around to me, lay from the closest hydrant, bring us a leader line, whatever. Right, like we backstretch to the rig. The rig comes to us. Nozzle firefighter is going to have that first section of that hose bundle. And again, I mentioned here atmospheric monitor, which is the four gas. A lot of times, you know, the officer wears it, but and you know, in some engines it's mounted up front, and some it's mounted in the back. So don't be sitting here passing things back and forth. Like if it's near you, grab it, put it on. And that a driver in that investigation is going to stand by the rig, and he's going to wait, right? He's going to, and in fact, I don't even want the driver to get out. Like, I want him to pull up, and I want him to sit right there. He can look at our pre-plan book and he maybe direct us to where some things are in the, but I want him in the rig, because if we find a fire and I say, hey, I need you to pull, like, go around to side Charlie, you'll see the open door, and, you know, bring us a line or hook up to the line that you see. I want him in the rig, and I want him ready to go. If they need to, that driver can also team up with that special service company, bring them to the seat of the fire with us, or that engine company can team up with that special service company, and you can send four people in to investigate that fire, which I do recommend, especially when you're covering a lot of ground in these big occupancies. Commercial occupancy offensive, man, same deal, dude. We're going to employ the appropriate caliber attack hand line. A lot of people want to go straight to the 2.5. I think that's, depending on the occupancy, depending on what you're doing, that could be a really good thing. Like, to me, the occupancy type, the size of the occupancy, like, a lot of times if the back storeroom of a 7-Eleven is on fire, yeah, that's at a commercial occupancy, but my 1¾-inch hand line flowing 185 gallons a minute should be able to knock that out. So I'm probably not going to pull a 2.5 in that respect. Then again, the back storeroom in the Walmart is on fire, I'm probably going to lead off with that 2.5, right? We can step it down if we need to, especially if we stretch that 2.5 and someone can bring us the hose bundle. If once we're done knocking down the bulk of the fire and we just need to mop up, we can spin off the tips, hook in that 1¾-inch, charge it, good to go, right? Like that's an option for us. Again, too, that officer is going to try to do that 360. They're going to be on the initial attack line. If we got to do a leader line, they'll help out there. They've got a role in that. The nozzle firefighter is going to be deploying the appropriate caliber hand line. They're going to be the nozzle person. I mean, I know that's shocker, right? They're the nozzle AIC, but they're going to be the nozzle person. They're going to be the one flowing and moving. They're going to be the one putting water on the fire, and we're going to be doing everything we can to get them to the seat of the fire and put the fire out fast. The driver is going to get that water supply. Maybe it's hooked up to a hydrant. Maybe it's supplying an FDC. Maybe it's deploying a leader line, charging attack line, like all those things depending on that occupancy type, right? So you've got to remain a little bit flexible when it comes to these commercial occupancies because we definitely need flexibility in that because they're so different, right? They have true sprinkler systems. Maybe they have a fire pump, right? Maybe they have a fire pump and we need that driver to go to that fire pump room to make sure it's running, right? Like we got a lot of things that we need to happen. So it needs to be flexible. But I'll say it again, walk, don't run in these commercial occupancies. So let's move on to a high rise. And I'll be quite honest with you. We don't do high rise. In fact, we don't really have a lot of true what I would consider high-rises, right? Tallest building right now in the department that I work in is, I think it's it's 9 stories. 9 stories. Now, they're coming. They've already approved. There was a document that the county had for a long time that prevented buildings from being built bigger than that. But now they've taken that away because we're kind of landlocked. We're a landlocked county, and they want people to still build stuff. So now they're letting people build them tall and tall and tall. And so we're starting to have these true high rises in the county and in the department that I work for. But be honest, like we still use 1¾ for our high rise pack or our hose bundle, right? Now it's 1.88, it's Pond Conquest, so you can develop, you can overpump it, to get to about 210, 215 gallons a minute, blah, 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 blah. You can, you can do a lot of things with it. We have tested it up to 13 stories, and it can meet that 185 gallon per minute flow out of that, right? But that's, again, of course, you know, barring that the piping is good, the, you know, blah, 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 or the fire pump is in good working. There's a lot of factors in there, and I know that, and we're working on it, especially with our testing of true ID hose, or true diameter hose. It's not necessarily the true ID brand. But so reevaluating what we're going to be utilizing on our standpipes. But for right now, that's what we have. We do have the option. We have our high rise, our 2.5 on our rigs packed in a fashion that you could shoulder load it and carry it with you if need be. So there is that option there to deploy 2.5 off of those standpipes. So we're going to investigate again, same as we've been talking about, carrying that high rise pack, all that good stuff. This, in an investigation, we typically, you know, depending on the occupancy type, you might get two engines in a truck, or so a lot of times that first due driver, he's going to that first due driver in an investigation, he's going to send the officer and the firefighter in, and the driver's going to go to the FDC and he'll charge it if they need him to. Really, 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 really encourage that engine company to team up with a special service, a ladder truck or a rescue before they go in, right? Like, that's just going to help you cover a lot of ground. High-rise occupancy, offensive fire attack. Same stuff as before, but the difference is, right, like, everybody's taking their high-rise packs, their high-rise bags, their knob, you know, blah, 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 all the tools that we're going to need, but the difference is here, and this is something we still do today, that driver is now going to become, the first due driver is now going to become the DPO in the stairwell. So they're going to have the high-rise bag. They're going to go up there. Again, another reason why you need to have all your, why you need to have your gear on, the way that we do business with that driver deploying with that first due engine and going to that standpipe, right? Going to that standpipe connection, he needs to have all his stuff on. So if we're waiting on him, right, it doesn't work, right? So bunker pants on, drive to the call, get out, throw on your coat, throw on your air pack, grab the high-rise bag, let's go up. And they become the DPO in the stairwell. They, while the officer and firefighter are stretching the line, they're flushing the standpipe, they're hooking up the standpipe valve, they're hooking up our inline pressure gauge, if we need an elbow, they're hooking it up, like they're doing all those things, right? They're doing all those things that we need to start putting a 1.75 hand line in service, or our high rise pack in service. If we need the 2.5, we can take it, right? But we, and then that person would also carry a piece of, like, shoulder load some of that 2.5 with them as well. And so that's kind of like the occupancy type stuff, right? We still have some other things that I feel are important to talk about. And I list them in my, and some of them, I call them plays, right? Like, I call them plays that sometimes we have to run. We'll talk about RIT and motor vehicle accident first. Then we'll get into some of the plays, like a blitz attack or leader line or something like that. So the writ, essentially, like, we're going to form that writ, and that officer is going to have all the stuff that we need. I'm a big believer in, again, I like to bring hose with me if I'm on the writ, and I'll bring up my high-rise pack or hose bundle with me if we don't need it. If we don't need it, we'll leave it sitting. But a lot of times, I've gotten up there, and the rig, and the first due rig, all the lines are off, like they're using them or whatever. But I've had hose with me, and I've been, and this has worked for me on a fire, and it's worked for me as being writ. I grab the reducer out the DPO compartment, we hook up to the rig, and now we have our line, right? It got me in on a fire a couple months ago where they were, hey, we need a second hand line. You know, we need another hand line on Division 2. Well, we had our high-rise pack or our hose bundles with us, and the only line that wasn't pulled was the 100-foot bumper line. We pieced our 200 feet into the 100-foot bumper line, and we got to go to the second floor when everybody else was standing around like, what do we do? What do we do? Well, we had our hose with us, right? And so we got to get in the game because we carried hose with us. So that's one of my tenets of the engine company. Like, you need to have hose with you. You're an engine company, right? Bring hose up there with you. If you don't need it, put it down, right? You don't got to pop the straps. Put it down. Grab it. You can get in the game if you have it with you. But that writ, you know, if we're a full writ, that driver's going to come up with us. But then we're going to have all of our stuff. We're going to have our writ bag. We're going to have our unit tagline. We're going to have irons. We're going to do all this. And that writ officer is going to do his own size up too. That officer or that engine, if you're the writ officer, do your own size up. Trust me, it'll help in the long run. I like to deploy on different sides of the building. Like, I like to have like people set up on all four corners. You know, if possible, if it's not too big of a house, so we've got eyes on, because I'm a big believer in that writ needs to prevent things from happening. So I'm a big believer in a proactive writ. So motor vehicle accidents, we kind of talked about this a little, but let's get into the formality of it. The officer is going to do the size up. The officer is going to grab that first. We carry a lot of our EMS bags, like on some of them are like the back of the rig, so like in the compartment. So we'll grab that EMS bag and just kind of set it up there. And he'll do that scene survey, and he'll go and talk to the nozzle firefighter. Hopefully, we'll have a triage report of the patients. They'll get together. Then the officer will call for additional resources if they need it. In our department, we have different levels of triage that we'll ask for. That if you say like it's a type X triage, it gets you X number of additional units and resources. If you don't need them and you need something specific, you ask, yada, yada, yada. That nozzle firefighter is going to triage. He's going to tell the company officer what he has, and then he's going to find that worst one, and he's going to start patient care on him. And the driver is going to like stabilize vehicles. He's going to mitigate some hazards. He's going to secure the vehicles. We talked about what securing the vehicle was. And then he's going to, after he does all that, he'll assist with patient care. And if it's an extrication, he's going to pull a hand line too. So blitz attack. So this gets into the plays, right? Like, so these are certain plays, right, that you can call. Like, so when I yell blitz attack, like I expect it to be deployed in this fashion. So blitz attack. The officer is going to do his 360 size up. He pulls the attack line to the door, because after we do the blitz attack, hopefully we're going to be able to go in and fight some fire. So the officer 360. Yanks the first attack line to the opening point. One, I like the officer to do that too, because the officer's now seen the whole building, right? So they will know, like, okay, I want the line to go in here through this door, yada, yada, yada. It's better to have them pull it. The nozzle firefighter, he's going to get an apparatus pump, right? Like, he's going to operate the pump. He's going to charge the hose, the line when it needs to be, yada, 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 because he should be coming off with his gear on all the way and his air pack on, right? The driver is coming off with his bunker pants on and throwing his coat on, but he doesn't have that air pack. So the driver's going to hop up to the top of the rig, and we have the extend-a-gun feature. And so the issue with that is, like, you can't charge it before you extend it. If you try to extend it to get that better angle on the fire, it'll knock your chiclets right out of your mouth, okay? So some of our apparatus now are coming with the gates that you can charge them up in the crow's nest. But a majority of them, none of our reserve apparatus have that, and a majority of them still don't have that valve. I think we're probably out of 22 engines that we have. We're getting ready to go to 22 engines. Only 5 of them have that valve. So a majority of it is you're charging it from the pump panel. So you have to have somebody at the pump panel and somebody up top. And that extended gun is awesome, but it doesn't do you any good if you don't get up there, extend it, and aim it. And you can't extend it once you charge it. You know, you have to extend it before. Again, like I said, it'll bust you in the face and knock your chiclets out. So that's why we have that driver climb up. He shouldn't be weighted down by that air pack. And then that nozzle firefighter can charge the line. Then he can go and do his thing. Once we shut it down, boom, shut it down. And then they can go, he can charge the attack line, boom, him and the officer go fight fire. The driver hops back down, finishes his water supply connections, so on and so forth. Blitz attack with a 2.5, a little bit different. Okay, a little bit different. And sometimes we utilize that 2.5 for a blitz attack, right? Like, maybe we need to bullseye. Maybe it needs to be a little bit closer than the deck gun can get. Maybe it's on the backside of the house. We're on the front of the house. It's on the backside of the house. Like, it's a large body of fire on the backside of the house. So we'll yank that 2.5 off, right? We'll yank that 2.5 off, and then we'll use it in that blitz attack function, probably with an 1.25 tip. So we're getting that 325 gallons a minute range at 50 PSI. And if we're just going to sit on it and not move it, I'll even tell that driver to crank it up a little bit. Give me freaking 60, give me even 70 so we can get in that 400 gallon per minute range, so we can really knock the crap out of this fire. But that officer, again, is going to do that 360-degree size up, that initial on-scene report, and he'll back that guy up on the 2.5. Nozzle firefighter is going to deploy that 2.5, and he's going to operate that line. And then that driver, he's going to charge that line. He's going to be the one that's going to pull our step-down attack line, like whatever that looks like, right? We may want to go in through side Charlie after we're done. We may want to go in through, or maybe we want to go in through the front door. Or he may bring us the hose bundles, and we'll piece it, and we'll step it down, and we'll step down from that 2.5, and we'll go in and mop up that way. So a lot of different things there. Again, needs to be flexible, so that's why we do it like that. And then the leader line, when we say leader line, we use 3-inch hose as a leader line. Or some people use the word trunk line, like whatever, but we're using 3-inch hose as our leader line. And so when we do a leader line, if we call that play, a lot of times what we'll do too is that officer, he's going to go do his 360, and he's going to come back to the rig if we need to do a leader line, right? Like the driver and the firefighter, rather, are going to start, getting ready for that. Like they're going to go ahead and get everything out that we need, blah, blah, blah. We're going to run that play. But that officer, and a lot of times too, what that officer will do, he'll leave something. Like, I know a lot of times I call it planting the flag. Like, if I've got my 6-foot hook, I'll run around back and I'll jam it in the ground where I want the leader line to come, right? I'll jam it in the ground. Or I'll grab my high rise pack, right? I'll grab that second hose bundle when I get off. And then when I'm doing my 360, okay, this is where I want the leader line to come. I drop it there and then I beat feet back to the rig, right? If the driver and the nozzle firefighter can bring me that leader line alone, awesome. If it's longer than about 300 feet, then I know I'm going to have to get in the game as the officer. So I'll start coming around. The firefighter will have his section of the hose bundle and a section of 3-inch, and he'll start going. The driver will be the last in the line. So if we need to go past like 300 feet, or 300-400 feet or whatever, then the officer will come in, take that second or third section of maybe even third section of 3-inch hose, and start beating feet up the road. And that driver will always be the last in the line, because that way when his section goes tight, he can run back to the rig and he can break the connection, hook it into the pumper, and start charging the line. Okay, that way he doesn't have to traverse the whole row of hose in order to come back and charge the line to us. But that's kind of how that leader line play works. Again, it needs to be a little bit flexible, and you need to drill it both ways. You need to drill it where like it's 400-500 feet and you got to stretch it, or you need to drill it to where it's only like 200 feet and the driver and the firefighter can do it alone, right? And then leader line to a portable master stream. Again, it's kind of the same way. That officer is going to get off, and what the officer typically does is that they grab the master stream device. So like if we're using a blitz fire, I have it with me, and where I want it, I set the blitz fire. That gives them that visual indicator of where they can stop, where they can stop. If I need to come back and get in the middle of the hose stretch, I will. If the driver and firefighter can do it, again. But again, in that sequence, that driver is going to be that last person in line. So they can run back to the rig, break the connection. They also know how much hose is out, right? Like, so they can count couplings, right? Like, they can do a lot of things. It helps them with their DPO calculations. Boom. They know that if it's like four or five sections of hose, like they know the calculations, they know the PSI, they know the friction loss. Boom. Right into the rig, charge it, bang. Send water up the line. We're fighting fire. So that is engine company riding assignments, according to me. Again, you don't necessarily have to agree. I've heard people say that these are too detailed. I've heard people say that that maybe they're not detailed enough, right? I've heard both. I've heard, like, what about this? What about that? And the beautiful part about this is that you can expand or contract them to fit. But what you can't do, you cannot, and I said this earlier, you cannot expect a level of performance that you don't share with anybody. There should be no question about what your role is when you read these. And these are a little bit old. I need to update them a little bit. I mean, unfortunately, I don't ride an engine very often anymore. But I can tell you that if I did, I would change some things. One of the things in the motor vehicle accident, talking to Basil at the conference, where if you've been living under a rock, you should know that Basil just performed an amazing rescue an amazing rescue in Orlando. They had a vehicle that was overturned and with a lady trapped, and the vehicle was on fire. And he put his SCBA and mask on the lady so that she could protect her away, save her, and it saved her life. Like, no doubt through his actions, that lady is alive today. There's no other way. No other way she lives without airway protection. And so talking to him at the conference, I asked him some questions about it, and he said from here on out, he's going to bring up his RIP bag. Every MVA, he's going to bring the RIP bag up, and he's going to set it there. Because he's like, the RIP bag would have been the better option. I wouldn't have had to take off my air pack. I wouldn't have, you know, blah, 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 blah. He went into all these reasons why the RIP bag was the better choice to put on this lady, but it was all the way back at the rig, and he was like, time was of the essence. If I waited to go back and get the RIP bag, like, it would have killed her, right? So wow. So, like, I can tell you right now that, like, for an MVA, I want the RIP bag on the ground, especially for entrapment. Especially, like, if it comes out, like I want it anyway, but, like, if you get those, like, you know, for motor vehicle accident with entrapment, whatever you call it, at your fire department, man, if you hear those words, pull your RIP bag off and just set it up by the cars. That way, if you have to get in that situation, man, you know, you're ready. You're that much more ready. Like, so that's going to, that would change what I do on a motor vehicle accident, right? Just one of those things, right? Just learning from other people. Like, I'm stealing that. Sorry, Basil, I'm stealing it. I don't think he cares. In fact, I think he would like me to steal it. So with that being said, that's it. That's engine company riding tool assignments. And so what I hope that these two podcasts gives you is not necessarily the way, right? Like, this isn't the Mandalorian. Like, this isn't the way, but a way. A way to lay out your mission, your vision, your values, your expectations, and your riding assignments for an engine company that can give purpose, that can give value, and can give direction to the firefighters on your crew, in your station. You can do these in the volunteer house too, by the way. Some people even go as far as to put index cards. Like, we did this especially in the volunteer firehouse where you never know what crew you're gonna get. We took each seat and broke down the tool and riding assignments on index cards and put them in the jump seats of the engine, the rescue, and the ladder truck when I was volunteering. Like, absolutely. Because you never knew who you were gonna get, and this person might not have ridden the ladder truck in a year. So now they hop in the backward seat. They know that when they get off, they need to do this, 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 and this. And on their seat, their primary job is search and rescue because they're riding behind the officer, right? Like, we did that. Engine company, you're like, you're riding this seat. You're the nozzle firefighter. Here's your job duties. Here's what you need to grab. Like, that's easy, right? That's so easy to do from a volunteer firefighter aspect. And you can do it in a career company, right? Like it gives organization to these things. You cannot expect a level of performance that you don't tell anyone. And this, I think, gives us a leg up on training because we can train this way, we can run these plays, and if they don't work, we change them, right? If they don't work, we change them, right? But it gives us an opportunity to train, it bullseyes our training, it lets us try these things out, it gives us purpose, it gives us organization, it gives us direction, and allows us to deploy faster on the fire ground. And that's what I really hope that this all gives you. It gives you a way that you can do that in your firehouse, on your shift, whatever, and take these things and move forward. Take episode 58 and 59 and make them and put them together for one huge megasode, and hopefully gives you some direction or some ideas or some things from my perspective on how you can organize and get the most out of the people in your firehouse, right? And give them a compass point to where if they start to veer off, you can continue to move them in the right direction. And it also gives them boundaries to, like, nope, we're not doing that, we're doing this, and we're moving forward. And I personally know that I've always operated better within a system such as that. And so I hope that you've gotten something out of these episodes. I hope they weren't too boring. You know, and I tried not to be as specific with these engine company riding assignments. Like, I talked about them a lot, but some of them are based on what I do and where I work, and some of them are based on, you know, when I was an engine company officer, which has been a while. It's been almost, 2017 when I got promoted to captain, and I, you know, was, you know, still not riding an engine every day when I got promoted to captain, right? So, you know, we're going on a while that I've been riding an engine company every day, and some things have changed, and some things have changed for the better, some things have changed for the worse, and so, you know, I would adjust these today if I had, I would adjust some of these today if I had the opportunity to get back in the front seat of an engine. But now, too, I try to, you know, adjust some of these for when I'm mentoring company officers, right? Like from that command captain and battalion level that I'm often riding in, I try to be like, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about trying to organize your thoughts? Have you thought about trying to organize this? Like when they get transfer guys in, like, hey, does this guy know what your expectations are? You know, when you get new people in the firehouse, have you told them what your firehouse is all about or your shift is all about? Like, don't just let them try to figure it out. Right? Like, tell them, start having conversations again, even if they're uncomfortable. So that's about it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. I know it's been a minute since I was able to do a true average Jake episode, but hopefully now with summertime being in and the conference being over, and I'll have a little more time to record. Thank you, anybody who continues to listen to this. It is, trust me, it's a labor of love. I like to do it. If I didn't like to do it, trust me, if I stop liking to do it, you'll know, because you'll never hear another one again, right? So with that being said, I can't do what I do without just some great support of some great people. The first being Vanguard Safety Wear. Vanguard Safety Wear, the makers of the MK1 Fire Glove. Those things are made for work. I wear them at work every day. I'm on my second pair. I'm on the MK1 Ultras now. I had the original MK1s. There's nothing wrong with them, but Vanguard sent me a pair of MK1 Ultras. So I wear them now, and I still have the MK1s, the original ones, in my bag that I carry on the rig in case the gloves I'm wearing get soaking wet. They're both awesome gloves. They make the Rescue One glove as well. Go to VanguardSafetyWear.com or DingusFire.com and get you a pair of MK1 Ultras, MK1s, or the Rescue Ones. Vanguard Safety Wear, made for work. Second is IDLH Technology Tactical Worksheet.com. Man, I love that stuff. I love the products that he puts out. I love the command board. It's the best command board out there, bar none. I keep trying to tell all the guys that I'm on the command team with at work to get one. We were doing live burn training the other day. I got the steering wheel desk and the command board, bing, bang, bong, did it great. Sat in the car. I like to sit in the car. I like to do cockpit command, you know, and did it great. Was getting compliments on how well the radio traffic went and how organized it was. And it's because of that command board. I can tell you, it works the way that my brain thinks. Go to IDLH Technology or TacticalWorksheet.com. Get you the command board, the mini command board, the PIO command board, all that stuff. Get you one. You will not be disappointed. He also has a YouTube channel. Go to the YouTube channel and see him and let him walk you through. Let him walk you through how to use the command board. I look at all of them. So it's been really, really great. I love it. Again, TacticalWorksheet.com, IDLH Technology. You can't find a better command board on the market. Taylor's Tins. Taylor's Tin makes metal helmet fronts. They make playing cards. They make basically anything you can make out of tin. Okay? Like, it's awesome. They have great, great, great products. I can't say it enough. I wear one. I've got one of their pump cards. They're just awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I can't say enough. Go to taylorstins.com and stop burning up leather. Start wearing Taylor's Tins. And lastly, that Fireground Commander Conference we talked about at the beginning of the episode. Fireground Commander, May 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2023. 3 days of lecture, lunch provided, social, probably two socials. We got group discounts available, $175 for 10 speakers. You cannot beat that deal. Ray McCormick, Shannon Stone, Lex Shady, Chris Tobin, DJ Stone, Sean Duffy, Kyle Romagus, Kyle Smith, Wells Wilson, Dan McMaster. You can't beat that lineup. I don't know of a conference that's any better than that in the whole country, and you're not going to get the deal that we can give you, $175 for all those speakers, lunch included, snacks, drinks, two socials. Best deal in the country, best value in the country, bar none. Go to embracetheresistance.com. click on the FGC tab and get registered today. And lastly, you know what we do. Spend 1 hour in the day in the gym working on your physical fitness, getting in shape for the job that we all signed up to do. Spend 1 hour in the library learning something about your profession. Read Fire Engineering, read Firehouse Magazine, read a firefighting book, get on YouTube, go on IDLH Technologies YouTube, Tactical Worksheets YouTube page, and go over stuff. Go to David Decker's webpage, YouTube channel, and start doing fire ground command. Look at fire behavior videos. Do something for an hour a day to get you ready for the job that you signed up to do. And then 1 hour of hands-on training every day, putting your hands on the tools that we need to do our job. You do that, you become a pretty phenomenal firefighter, I guarantee it. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay aggressive. I'm out.